ain't no wannabes here with some not so nice advice for your writing career. To be clear, no punches will be pulled, but the punch may be spiked. How they like before they get on the mic. To my left we got the mighty Mer Lafferty, and if I piss her off, believe me, she'll come after me. And her co-host Matt Evan Wallace on the right. Yes, she may be half as hype as she can take him in a fight. So settle in, folks, buckle in and boot up. Time to meddle in a way to make your writer shut up. It's hard work, but the perk is that it's fun and exciting. Facebook will still be there when you're done writing. Ditch Diggers! Ditch Diggers!
Coming to you live from Jeff Goldblum's writing desk, it is the Ditch Diggers with Mer Lafferty and Matt Wallace. How are you, Matt?
I'm good. We're actually atop Jeff Goldblum's writing desk. I think that's an important distinction to make.
Yes, because, we're just sitting on it.
For one, it's funnier. And for another, I think it ramps up the tension because, you know, what happens if we fall?
I would think what happens if he comes in and sees us sitting on his desk.
Well, I would have thought at this point he'd be used to us, you know, loitering in his various chambers.
Really? I thought we were, like, super sneaky.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, we're sneaky in the way that, like, the Animaniacs are sneaky. So, like, he knows we're here. He's got, like, he's got an oafish, comical security guard, inept, who keeps chasing us but never catches us. It's a whole thing. There's a tower he'll lock us into if we ever get caught that's shaped like his head. It's like a Jeff Goldblum head-shaped water tower.
And that's where we live?
That's where we live. And, you know, yeah, I don't know. I don't know what any of this is or what's happening.
Neither do I.
We're at Jeff Goldblum's, or rather atop Jeff Goldblum's writing desk, Murray, because it's Correspondence Day.
Yay!
We're answering all the questions that we haven't answered. Lo, these many months we've been infrequently releasing podcast episodes. Because of our busy, busy, important lives.
Exactly. So we want to catch up with some feedback, which is woefully old again.
We do, but where your feedback is everything to us. It means a lot. It tends to pile. We're like Santa Claus that way. Mer and I are like Santa Claus. But
that's a pretty good way to spin this in a positive light.
Yes, and but yeah, we always get to it eventually, and that's our guarantee. That's the Ditch Diggers guarantee, and really our writing mantra. We'll get to it eventually.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we're going to catch up on some feedback. We're going to answer all the questions that have gone unanswered. Not all the questions in the world, just the ones that have been sent to us about the writing business.
Sure.
We don't have that kind of time.
Yeah.
And frankly, I don't think I should be allowed to solve the world's problems. I'll just say that. I have a stunning self-awareness to me where I know these things. I should not be put in charge.
I'm with you.
I'd be terrible at it.
Mm-hmm. I agree. But Philip's not asking you to be in charge. Philip is asking if we have any thoughts on creating a coherent public-facing persona out of multiple types of genres of writing. Fiction and nonfiction, or poetry and prose, or podcasting and written fiction, which we obviously both have experience with. Should you be looking to separate those works, a la your discussion of pseudonyms, or trying to unify them into one, and how?
That is a very, very good question, and you asked it with a very good segue, Mer. That was flawless.
Thank you.
I just want to find, you know, and I have to point it out, because that's the Ditch Diggers way, but that was a fantastic segue into that question. No, that's really good stuff. Starting off hot. Guns blazing, Mer. Coming out guns blazing.
Yes, thank you for the awesome, timely question back in April, Philip. I'm very sorry.
Where did the year go? Where do any of the years go?
I have no fucking clue.
Anyway. We were recently talking about how you can use pseudonyms to brand specific types of fiction if you write in multiple genres. The way many authors do, Shauna McGuire is the first one that pops to mind, just because I
really like Vernon.
Ursula Vernon with her Kingfisher brand, and that's a good way to do it. But we've also talked about kind of the I'll call it the Cameron Hurley school of thought, because she was the last one I saw talking about it, which is you turn yourself into the brand.
You know,
you unify everything under one thing, and the point is not someone is looking for a hot new mystery novel, someone's looking for a hot new sci-fi novel, someone's looking for a hot new poem. Aren't we all looking for a hot new poem? Or
every day.
Every day. Hashtag every day. But you're not looking for any one of those things. You're looking for the next Cameron Hurley thing. You're looking for the next Mer Lafferty thing.
Yeah.
You're looking for the next Matt Wallace thing. You know, you become the brand so that you, in theory, increase your longevity and you increase the probability that the audience will follow you and not be bound to whatever, you know, the next thing is that comes out. Not just from you, but from, you know, the industry, the machine, the great. I think I should just left the machine. Machine was good. But yeah, so I think those are kind of the two schools of thought. And this is something authors have struggled with since the beginning of time. I've been rewatching all the old Prisoners of Gravity episodes. Have you ever seen that show, Mer?
No.
Have we talked about it before?
Don't think so.
Yeah, it's an old Canadian show from the early 90s. Where this dude, I mean, the premise was he had gotten so tired of being a prisoner of gravity here on Earth because everything was getting so terrible, which is really relevant to the times we live in now, that he attached a rocket to his car and, like, flew into space, but he crashed into a satellite, so he's trapped in the satellite. But
oh, I think we have talked about this.
Oh, have I talked about this?
Yeah, but keep going.
Yeah, but he crashes into the satellite, and he's trapped there in space, but he has access to all these media and communications devices. So that's the premise. What the show is he basically just picks, like, a general topic, and then he talked to, like, all the big science fiction and fantasy authors, all the big comic book writers of the day, and even movie people now and then. And it's really an amazing historical document. Now, they're all, you can't, like, find them on DVD, but they're, like, all on YouTube, which is really cool. But just, he interviews people like you would never have seen interviews with before unless you, like, went to a small convention in, like, 1992 or whatever. So it's really, it's a fantastically interesting show, and I recommend everybody go check it out because they've got episodes on, like, every topic from, like, marketing to, you know, racism and science fiction to just all kinds of really interesting stuff. But hell's my point with this? I was just watching one the other day. I was just watching one the other day where they were literally talking about what we're talking about here now. And I specifically remember an interview with George R. R. Martin in, like, 1990 when he looked like a Floridian drug dealer with the hat and the sunglasses and the polo shirts. And he was talking about how it drove his editor. This is just interesting to hear because this is before Game of Thrones, like, or not Game of Thrones, but Song of Ice and Fire. Like, blew up and he became the biggest author in the history of, you know, whatever. But he was talking about how it drove his editors bananas because he would write all these different things. Like, he wrote a bunch of horror novels in addition to writing science fiction and fantasy, and he wrote for TV. And he talked about how editors in general will want to keep you in your little box of writing this thing, and this is the thing I do, and I do this thing over and over again because it's very hard to market an author when you don't have a classification for them. So it can be an issue. I would like to think since 1991, things have changed in the industry, but it can still be an issue. The thing I would add is now we have a lot more avenues to do these things. You know, when I talk about turning yourself into a brand, like, you have the ability to do that because you have social media, you have the internet, you have a much further reach yourself as an author than you once did. So you have that option.
Yeah, I think I've struggled with this a lot as a podcaster and a writer, and I write nonfiction. And I thought I had different websites for a little while, and that just seemed to be overkill, which is why our brand, The Ditch Diggers, is still in my personal homepage.
Which I don't have an issue with at all. I think it's good.
Right.
You came up with the Merverse. Everything is under the Merverse.
Exactly. That's why I call it that.
As soon as I heard that, I was like, that Mer, she's got her thinking cap on.
She sure is savvy.
She is. I turned to the person I was talking to in the speakeasy in the 30s, and I said, you know what, Joe? That there dame's got her thinking cap on. That's what I said. That's not a thing that happened. I've literally never referred to you as a dame or anyone as a dame. I mean, unless you're Dame Judi Dench, then it's a, you know, it's a
sure.
title.
Sure.
But yeah, no. And that's, I think, is a fantastic example, because you do 10 million things, literally mm-hmm. 10 million
yeah,
things.
Yeah, exactly.
And much like, you know, you mean you look at like the MCU, you look at like the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's like, it's the same thing. You've got the Mer-verse. You are the same thing as Marvel, Mer, on the exact same level.
There are some differences.
There are differences, yes. Women actually feature prominently in your fiction, which is good.
Yes, I was also thinking, like, monetarily.
Well, I mean, let's not quibble. I think it's really talking about the scale of creativity and accomplishment, and I think you're really on par with anything Marvel's done in that respect. But I think that's a very smart way to do it, because you have a home for all of your things, and people come to the Mer-verse to check out all the things. What is Mer doing? What are the podcasts Mer's doing this week? What tie-ins has she written this week? What's the new thing she's got coming out? So I really think when you approach it that way, it doesn't really matter. I mean, you know, what I'm not saying what you do doesn't matter. Not you specifically. The royal you now is speaking to the person asking the question, and by proxy, the audience. Not saying what you do doesn't matter, but if you fold everything under a banner smartly the way Mer has, then, you know, you can kind of do whatever you want, because people can pick and choose. And they're coming because they like your brand, they like you, they like your personality, your sensibilities, what you do. And they'll check out, you know, whatever you're doing under the Mer-verse banner. Not Mer's, you have to pick your own banner. You can't use Mer's banner. I want to make that very clear. Yeah. You have to make your own verse or universe. Because uni means one.
Oh, God. Okay, we need to move on because we got a lot of questions and I don't know how much we're going to get to today. We have a question from Kay. We've talked about, actually there are a couple of craft questions here I'd like to cover and I should be writing, Kay. But there is one here that I believe fits Ditch Diggers, which is, I self-published the ebook for 6 weeks in the UK. How is it different than self-publishing in the US? Well, first, the reason why I did that is, I'm not good at sounding full of myself, but honest to God, I cannot understand why, but the UK rights to 6 weeks did not sell. I have sold multiple other territories, many, many other territories, and yet the other biggest English market in the world, English speaking market in the world, no, not there. So, after a while, I just decided, you know what? Fuck it. This is my book, and I have the rights in that area, so I might as well self-publish it. So I hired a friend to do a cover for me, and I published it in December. And it does pretty okay. You know, a couple hundred a month. I'm not going to complain. The only difference in publishing is a box to check. Amazon is the evil overlord, but it's the evil overlord because it does a lot of things very, very well. And it's super easy to just sit there and click all the buttons to indicate the territories where you want to sell your book. So I unclicked everything except for, the UK.
Because you're not allowed.
Right.
Over here.
I couldn't even remember where I did not have the rights to sell them, but I did have the rights to sell it in the UK. So the only difference was, I checked a box. It's that easy. I know Amazon's evil, but yeah.
I would say the unchecking was actually the important part.
Yeah, it was. I was very, very careful. That was like a double, triple check. Making sure I did not accidentally self-pub in the U.S.
and violate immense amounts of copyright.
Yeah.
It's just interesting that that's what it comes down to in today's world. You forget to uncheck a box, and suddenly you're in violation of your contract.
Yeah.
And I assume this is a conversation you had with your agent, and you talked about these things and whatnot, what you should do with it, or was this a unilateral decision? Was this a Mer-verse decision?
This was my decision. Nobody else. I was tired of I don't know what the UK markets were waiting for. I don't know if they were waiting for Orbit to buy another book from me and then they would buy them both. I seem to remember something about that. But then that leaves the future of my book in Orbit's hands and they didn't buy another book. So then I couldn't sell in the UK. It's just weird. So right.
But I'm more thinking about, like, I want to hear about your thoughts on, like, the timing of it. Is it something you were going, well, I don't want to wait, I want to strike while the iron's hot, or hotter than it will be if I'm waiting, you know, a couple of years down the road to see if they finally get their shit together? Or, like, what was your thoughts on why did you do it when you did it, I guess is what I want to ask, because I think it's relevant to the question.
I got tired of waiting, and... No, I'm serious. It's like, you know, I was sitting around.
After how long? I want to talk about. Like,
oh, well, I mean, I guess 2 years.
Yeah, that's fair. That's which is what I wanted to get.
Yeah, it came out in January of 2016.
Right. Okay. I'm sorry. Say that again, because I was talking over you.
It came out in January 2016, and I published it in the UK, in December of 2018. And I published it in December because I wanted it to be eligible for the UK awards, which it did not receive any nominations for, but oh well.
But that was good thinking. You took these things into consideration.
I don't know if it got any attention. I didn't push it too hard. I'm just not a marketing, I just don't have that marketing gene in me. But like I said, it's selling, so that's nice.
No, selling is good. Yeah, I just wanted to get to the point of like, oh my God, my book's been out a week. I need to self-publish everywhere because no one's bought the rights yet. I just wanted to make it clear it wasn't like that was the situation.
Right.
And talk about the timing of it. So I think that's a pertinent part of that question.
But, yeah, while it was nice to have the rights and nice to publish as I wanted to, you know, I still would have rather sold the rights because I would have gotten more money and, you know, marketing and all that stuff. So that's why I waited, just in case.
And that's fair. No, that's good. I wanted to make sure we covered that aspect of the question. I think that's the next thing people ask is, well, how long do I wait? Mm-hmm. It's been 5 minutes. Why haven't they bought it yet?
Yeah.
You're huge in China, though. We should make that clear right now.
Yeah, I don't feel too good about that right now, but...
No, but, you know, it's something to be said.
Yeah.
What other territories did you sell?
Oh, Taiwan, Germany, Russia, Korea, Japan?
Yeah. You slept on that one, UK. I'm going to say it. Literally the entire rest of the world was hip to the six-way strain, and the UK didn't want to get on it. And I just want to admonish the UK publicly for that. The whole UK...
They're also having their own problems right now. Oh, boy, the world's on fire, like, Matt.
Yeah, but, you know, people still need to read books.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do. So if you're in the UK and you want to read my book, it's available, self-pub, six weeks, and amazon.co.uk.
Money goes right in Murr's pocket.
That's right. Right in my pocket. What?
I was going to make a really awful pun. And thank God I vetted it in my head before I just blurted it out.
Smart.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on.
I think we have a question here that I think would be best for a full episode, which unfortunately is, will we be willing to do an episode on back-channeling and confronting predatory behavior?
Oh, yeah, that's definitely a whole episode. We need to get guests for that, too. We need outside perspective on that.
Yeah, so thank you, anonymous person, for suggesting it. It's a great topic, and we need to talk about it, but we're going to dedicate a whole show to it.
Yes, we are, in the near future, real near future, not our near future, which is like years from now.
Okay, we can go through this one pretty quickly. Diane wants to know, do you guys have any insight on how and if library checkouts support authors? Well, in the U.S., the libraries pay for our books, number one. Mm-hmm. And number two, it builds readers. So if mm-hmm. somebody doesn't have a lot of money and they check our book out of the library and they think, wow, they get into the brand. See, we're circling back. We get into the brand of Murr Lafferty or Matt Wallace. Maybe when things are better for them and they go to the bookstore instead of the library for their books, they will buy it. Or they'll go back to the library and they'll get another book out, which encourages the library to buy more books to keep on the shelves to meet demand. So it does help. In the UK, as far as I know, authors actually get paid a small tiny little bit for every book that's checked out of the library.
Yeah, I believe we've touched on that previously. Yeah. Should probably keep that data handy so we can refer to it.
Yeah.
But yes, yeah, all of that. I love having books in libraries. I think it's awesome. I mean, I just love libraries. But yeah, it's like promotion you get paid for. If you look at it as paid promotion and here in America, I think it's always worth doing. And, you know, people tell other people. They Instagram. They Twitter. They Telegram. That's a thing now.
No. We need to keep going, dude. One person writes just to thank us for our Ditch Digger episode on Ian McEwan and his ridiculous new book. She wants to remind us that his 2016 novel was Nutshell, which was a retelling of Hamlet from the perspective of an unborn fetus.
Groundbreaking!
Yes, this is real. No, I haven't read it and have no plans to. But they sign it. Keep up the great work, and I'm sorry I canceled my Patreon. Financial circumstances changed. I just want to make it clear to people that while we greatly, greatly appreciate Patreon support, we understand if you need to cut it down or cut it out completely. Everybody's financial situations are personal. I know I feel super guilty when I have to reduce my support of someone, but you don't need to apologize. We were, you know, if you supported us for 2 months, we're grateful for those 2 months. That's 2 months of your support that we didn't have. So I you don't need to apologize. We're just grateful you're listening still.
Yeah, absolutely. It's no one owes us or anyone anything ever. Yeah.
Okay. This one is tough. We got anonymous. My first trilogy was published by an indie publisher. I'm trying to move on, get an agent, and sell my next trilogy. Same world, but trying to distance the two. Problem is, I've written a companion book for the first trilogy. I don't know what to do with it. I'm not sure if I offer it to my original publisher or self-publish. I'm not sure I can pitch it to anyone else, since it's obviously tied to the first trilogy. Am I muddying the waters for the second trilogy? Do I have to give up on this book to better the chances of the new trilogy?
Wow, that's a lot of for one world for. yeah, no, there's a lot of ways you can go with that, I guess. I don't know about muddying the water so much. I just think, you know, it's a tough thing to sell compartmentalized like that to different people.
Yeah, and I honestly think you should just self-publish the companion book. You can offer it to the original publisher if they're still around, sure. But I really don't think the second publisher, if you get it, will be interested in it. And I'm a little worried that a new publisher might want something completely new from you. Be prepared for that. It's a tough thing. But, you know, think about your career as not these books, but, you know, all of your writing that you'll ever do. So,
yeah, we talked about that before,
yeah.
Too, not getting too precious or too attached to that one idea or that one world or that one set of characters. And just honestly, like, quite frankly and brutally, when you're starting out like that and you've just had, you know, small indie release. I mean, I'm assuming it was a small indie release. The person just said indie. It could have been a huge indie success. I don't know. But starting out when you just had small indie releases, you don't really have the privilege of doing a huge epic, you know, Terry Brooks-esque saga, because you're just not established enough to keep doing books in that world with multiple publishers and multiple things. You know, that's something that you really need to have the luck. Either you're doing that yourself. If you're doing it yourself and you're self-publishing, you can do whatever the hell you want. For, you know, you read the same book for 20 years and just keep putting them out. I'm not telling you what to do, but if your goal is to get an agent and sell to bigger publishers, then, yeah, you're going to have to examine the idea of exploring new things and having something new to offer that isn't anchored by having had it come out from a smaller publisher previously for, you know, three books and all this stuff. You know, but authors, on the flip side, authors with really successful big series do find it beneficial to publish those ancillary things like a companion book, or a lot of authors do novellas or short stories set in the world and sell them themselves. And those can be nice little side earners and nice publicity for, you know, the big trilogy. So maybe keep the companion book in the back pocket and, you know, try to land the newer, or at least, you know, kind of set apart trilogy in that world with somebody bigger, and then, you know, you can put that out and maybe by then the rights to the original thing will revert to you, and that's something else you can explore.
Yeah. Excellent.
You gotta look at new ideas and new things when you're just, especially when you're just starting out.
Yeah. We've got another one. It feels like we've done this before, but I can't remember. I'm binging a lot of TV now, and I'm wondering if that kind of stuff is going to flow through to book publishing. Will book publishers want to do a series of books published around the same time? I feel like we've done this before, but I can't remember. Do you know if we've done this before?
I don't recall offhand, but, you know, refreshers never hurt.
Right. Well, I think it can. It did with, sort of, with Jeff Vandermeer's Southern Reach series, but those were three novels published a couple of months apart. And I think John Skavron also had a series like that from Orbit. But it's hard because most of what's on Netflix have either someone else has already taken the monetary chance that to pay for the whole season, or Netflix has decided to produce the whole season. But with writing, they'll give you like a 2-book deal. Even if you have a trilogy in mind, they'll give you a 2-book deal. And if the first book didn't do well, they're going to want your second book to be something else. And so maybe they would take an established writer and give them a 3-book deal with a super late deadline to make sure they could get all 3 books in. But I don't think it makes a lot of sense monetarily or the workload to do. I can't even imagine. I mean, we'd all be dead by the time Martin finishes his last book if they were trying to get him to write both at the same time.
Yeah, I don't see the upside, honestly, at the end of the day. You know, you just end up killing yourself.
Yeah.
And there are a million variables that go into that kind of thing. You know, if the publisher or you have an editor who really likes what you're doing and is really passionate about it and will champion it really hard, you know, and a publisher who agrees with them, even if it's not doing so well, that can keep the series going or get them interested in doing more. If it's getting reviewed really well and getting good press, but isn't selling well, like that can keep it going or get more books out of you, or, you know, there are a million different things that can and will happen with that. There's no way to predict or parse any of them. So I don't see the point in breaking your back under the weight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, God, because if you did do it in the first book, well, if they released it all at the same time, that would guarantee you'd get your trilogy out.
That would. I don't know that it makes the most sense marketing-wise, but, you know, there you go.
Yeah.
There's just so much, Murph. That's the thing. You're just dealing. We always say other authors aren't competition, and that's its own thing. But there's so much stuff, you know.
Yeah.
So, I think you kind of want to focus on one thing at a time, because you don't want people to have to, you know, with all the stuff they have to focus on, to have to focus on multi stuff from you. Multi stuff is a word I just invented.
Yeah. Well done, man. We have a question from Katie, who says...
This is the same K from before? Or
no, this is KT.
K?
Different person.
KT. Okay.
And we're up to June now. And again, I'm sorry because it's several months have passed, so I don't know where she is in her novel now. But I have a novel I've written most of, about 75,000 words. I'm at the third act. It's a project I'm passionate about, but frankly, I'm worried it's too trashy. It's a cheap paperback novel plot. Not the brand of writing I want to be typecast as. Going back to the brand again. Are my efforts spent better writing a novel I can sell and want to get published? I started working on 2 other novels. The problem is, while I love those stories, I'm not loving writing them as much as I love the trashy novel. I think you should finish the trashy novel, because it's always a good... I mean, it's a good exercise to start a story and finish it. You will learn something by doing it. But if you're worried about your brand, then start writing a quote-unquote real novel and self-publish the trashy thing under another username. Username? Pseudonym. That. I'm sorry, I was thinking about the bot that fooled Fox News.
Yeah.
And it had a dirty username. One of those things, if you see it written, it's fine, but if you say it out loud, it becomes like...
It was
an
anus, right? Something
yes,
anus.
It was something
Hugh,
anus.
It was Hugh Janus. So it was like Hugh Janus.
Hugh Janus, yeah.
Yeah, that's what it was. And yeah, they were using it on a news show. I use the term news loosely. That was pretty funny.
Yeah, so you should publish your trashy book under the pseudonym Hugh Janus.
Hugh Janus.
And then work on the other two. Do you disagree, Matt?
From a branding marketing perspective, no. I hate classifications like trashy novel and I'm not laying this on you. I know you're just answering the question, Mark, but what is a trashy novel? What is a real novel? I hate that shit so much. It's so counterproductive to everything we try to do as writers, and you do have to think about it when it comes to branding and marketing. I hate that that's an actual thing, but I just wanted to add that. I agree with everything you said, but I will add to it. I really, really hate having to classify things in that way. Just because somebody deals with subject matter that may be deemed, you know, not particularly literary by an arbitrary establishment doesn't make it trash.
Right.
But I agree with what you said from a marketing and branding perspective.
Sure. And I know a lot of people who write things that they feel would be viewed as that, and they either self-publish it, or they publish under a different name, or they throw it up on an archive of our own or something. And, you know, some people just love writing various stuff, whether it's going to be published or not.
Yeah, I resent that fear and that concern. It's a real thing, and I'm not saying you can dismiss it, you know, depending on what your goals and your aims are professionally, but you should just be able to write what you want to write and, you know, try to do what you want to do with it. But, you know, I'm an idealist, Mer. That's how people describe me, as an idealist.
Yes, yes, you are a sunny side up kind of guy.
Yeah, I want eggs. Eggs would be delicious.
They would.
Why do eggs and bacon go so well together, Mer? That's a topic for another time.
That's not even a craft question, dude. That's so off topic.
What if you're writing about eggs and bacon?
That's still a craft question.
What if you want to market a book about eggs and bacon? Oh, see, you got nothing now, right?
No. No.
I'm going to write a book about eggs and bacon now, and I'm going to market it, and we're going to talk about the marketing of it on the show, the marketing of it. I can say words.
I'm going to hold you to that. So, Leela was wondering if we could talk about the collaborative projects we've worked on. Any advice on finding a good team and balancing personality traits with talent/credentials? I've worked on Book Burners with Cereal Box, and I have no advice on finding a good team because I feel like I just kind of hit the jackpot my first time. We were, you know, very kind and constructive group that we didn't have a lot of clashing. If we had disagreements, we didn't feel bad speaking up, and there was never any fighting. It was just like, I think this should happen. No, this should not. That should not, because of X, Y, and Z. And oh, okay. So it's not a lot of fighting. No ego clashing. Very supportive, but I don't know how that happened. You might want to ask Max Gladstone, because he's the one who put us all together. But I don't know how to do that. I was in it. It worked. But since it's not something I actively build myself, I don't know.
Yeah, I really haven't been in a position to do the hiring either. I've worked on a television show, and I've worked in video games and other gaming projects. And I've been part of good teams and bad teams, but I've never had to assemble the team myself, unless you count some self-publishing projects, but that wasn't writing, that was just getting editors and
sure,
you know, artists and everything. So I don't know, personalities are tough when it comes to that kind of thing. it's much easier if you get hired by someone else and it's a job in a way, because you just kind of have to deal with the situation instead of trying to come up with the recipe. You know, your job is just to make the thing. So that can make it kind of easier to not have to worry about that. But I don't know. I don't know. It's hard to answer that one because I've never had to assemble a team. We should get people on and talk about assembling a team, Mer. I love assembling the team montages and movies. So
they are good.
I would like to do that with our writing show. We can have an assembling a writing team, not montage, because it's a podcast and that wouldn't work. But
now I feel a challenge.
We will figure out a way to do an assembling the team montage.
Yeah.
On a podcast. Audio podcast, I should say. Because if you're doing a video podcast, it's not hard at all, because that's what a montage is. It's a visual thing. Anyway, so I'm sorry we were such limited help on that question.
Yeah.
It's beyond our experience. And you have to know your limits when it comes to talking, writing about your own experiences.
Yeah. Well, we only have one left, and I believe there's a lesson to be learned here. Adam sent me a link to a tweet and said, "This is a rights contracting story. Could be interesting or not." And I clicked on it, and the tweet didn't exist. So I have no idea what he's talking about. So if you want us to comment on a Twitter post, know that that stuff is not evergreen, and you might want to give us more context.
Yeah, that's true. Preserve it. Preserve with a screen grab or something like that for posterity. But well, I'm really glad you brought that one up, Mer.
Yeah. Even though I don't know what the rights contracting story was, it was from I know it was from Comic Book Resources, that Twitter stream, but that's all I know.
Is that legit or is that one of the shitty MRA ones? I can never tell anymore.
I'm not sure. They are posting a piece about Jennifer Aniston blaming Marvel for the lack of good roles. So, yay, let's dogpile on a woman. Although it also did say Batwoman is being review bombed on Rotten Tomatoes, and I don't think it would be, that would be the headline if it was an MRA type site. It would be, "Here's where you can review bomb Batwoman."
Here's where it'd be a rallying call. It's not, it's really not funny. It's terrible. The world is terrible.
People, I know. That's why we have to laugh or else we'll cry.
Exactly. So we're caught. Are we actually?
So we're caught up. Yeah, that's it.
Email questions. Wow. That's amazing.
I know.
So again, our apologies to everyone who had to wait several months to get an answer on their question. And I know that it probably wasn't helpful at this point because you had to figure out whatever you were dealing with on your own. But that in and of itself is a writing industry lesson, I feel. See how I brought it all the way around the
yeah.
circle? It's why they call it a revolution. It keeps coming back around.
I thought that was the Alice's Restaurant.
Well, that too. You want to talk, but if we can't talk about eggs and bacon, I'm not going to talk about grits. It's all or nothing when it comes to breakfast food discussion on my podcast.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I have to go because I got errands to run for the child, and I got to do that mom thing. But you can see my information at merverse.com. And you can email the show. Please put Ditch Diggers in the subject line at mightymer@gmail.com. And I have a book called Six Wakes and another book called Solo, A Star Wars Story, and a book for kids called Minecraft, The Secret Journals.
Damn, you write good stuff.
Thank you, man. So do you.
I try. Yeah. I have the Sin du Jour books out there. You can go get those. You can go get Rancor, Life in Grudge City. It's my Lucha Buddy Cop novella. And actually, I want to mention very briefly, I know you have to go, but Hood Town by Krista Faust, one of my favorite novels, has a brand new edition out from the publisher of Rancor, Life, and Grudge City. And if you buy the new edition of Hood Town, there's actually an excerpt from Rancor, Life, and Grudge City by me in Krista Faust's Hood Town. So
wow.
Go check that out for Parts Unknown Publishing. Very, very great book about masked Mexican wrestlers. It's noir. It's all really good stuff. So go check that out.
Excellent. All right, well, we'll see you next week, guys, and back to consistency. Yay.
Yay.
you can support us at patreon.com/mightymur.
Ditch Diggers!
Theme song by Devo Spice. DevoSpice.com.